What is up, team Tip Jar? Welcome back to the Tip Jar podcast. I'm your host, Cody Keys. And if you have already subscribed to the Tip Jar podcast, and every time one of these jokers goes live, it gets pushed to your mobile device, thank you so much for being on our team and a part of our Tip Jar family. We are so thankful that people actually like to listen to what we have to talk about, and we're all learning about being musicians and all of that good stuff together. And it's just a fun community to be a part of. If you've never listened to the Tip Jar podcast before, and this is your first episode, you picked a great one to jump in on. This is episode 33 with my friend Nathan Thomas. So if you are a producer, or you like the recording aspects of things, or if you are a bass player, these are the things that Nathan knows much, much better than I do. So we're all going to learn about that together. Nathan is currently the bass player for Scotty McCreery, which is awesome because right now, as we're recording this podcast today, Scotty McCreery has a number one chart-topping single on the country music charts. So congrats to Scotty and to Nathan. But Nathan plays bass for him. He's also a producer in Nashville. He produces a bunch of different groups, one of those being a group called Us the Duo. I'll link that to my show notes so you guys can listen to them and hear that if you're not familiar. Also, Nathan has played bass for some other folks that you might have heard of in the Christian music world, that being Matt Marr, Audrey Assad, Britt Nicole, Jeremy Camp, just to name a few. So Nathan knows what he is talking about, and he taught me a lot of stuff today, and I'm excited to be able to share this conversation with you guys. So I will delay you no further. Here's a conversation with me and my friend Nathan Thomas. Today on the Tip Jar podcast, I would like to welcome a friend of mine. His name is Nathan Thomas. Welcome to the Tip Jar podcast, Nathan.
Thanks, Cody. I'm glad to be here.
So, just for the audience listening in right now who might not know who you are, kind of give us your story of kind of how you got started playing music and where that journey has taken you up until today.
Sure. Well, I grew up, my dad was a minister of music in a church, so I kind of grew up in the, you know, surrounded by music in the church and everything. And both my parents, you know, are accomplished musicians, and they're always vocalists, and my sister was a singer, and it turns out I am not a singer, so I had to figure something else out. And so about seventh grade or so, I, you know, dabbled with piano and clarinet, a whole bunch of stuff. And I remember in seventh grade, the middle school band teacher said, "Hey, we have a jazz band, but we need a bass player. So we have this, you know, cheap little bass here at school. If anybody wants to try it out, go for it." And I was like, "Oh, that sounds cool. That's a lot cooler than clarinet."
So oh, yeah. I mean,
I borrowed it.
You get tons of ladies with the clarinet. That's oh, yeah. For sure.
Clarinet is definitely a chick magnet. So I took the bass home, and my dad knew enough, you know, played enough guitar. He was able to explain it to me, and it just clicked. And so I've been playing bass guitar since seventh grade and just kind of worked my way through that whole system. And I moved to Nashville in 1999, and I was, I guess, a sophomore in high school at the time. And I played for the show choir, just playing, you know, like show tunes and whatever. But one of the guys in the show choir, his dad was in a band called Diamond Rio, which okay. was kind of a big 90s country band.
And oh, yeah.
He came in one time to play piano for his son doing a song, and I played bass with him. And he goes, "Man, have you ever thought about, you know, kind of getting into music and being a hired gun?" I was like, I don't know what that is. And he said, "Well, there's, you know, people that get hired to play with artists, and that's, you know, your job and livelihood is what you do." And I was like, "So it's not a band?" He's like, no, that's not a band, but you're in a band. You know, and it was this big confusing thing to me at the time, but it's the first I'd ever heard of it. And turns out in Nashville, that's a, you know, a huge community. And so from that point on, basically, I was like, that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, the thought never came into my mind of how hard it would be to do that. It was just, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
So when
and
you
so I went off to college and
when you moved to Nashville, did your parents and whole family move to Nashville when you're in high school? Or
yeah, okay. My dad had gotten a new job at a church here in Nashville, and we kind of jumped around from church to church. And
right
now he's out of music completely, and he's a psychotherapist, so he went on his own little path.
But nice.
I stayed in Nashville when they moved, and just kind of kept pursuing music from there.
Cool. So after the whole Diamond Rio conversation, where did that take you?
I think kind of at that point, I mean, my parents were still like, you have to go to college. And I was like, okay. So I went to college, and every summer coming back to Nashville, I kept kind of slowly finding more and more people that were doing what I wanted to do. And, you know, whether it be session players or just people that were touring, and I would just hit them up. This is before Facebook and MySpace, so I had to actually, you know, do a little research and find people's emails and
right.
phone numbers.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of really great people who were very kind, who would let me come and, you know, sit in on one of their sessions or things like that, and kind of just really got involved in that world and fell in love with it. So once I got out of college, I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And luckily I'd met a friend in college, and we moved in together in Nashville, and he had a friend from the college he went to that she was a new artist by the name of Stephanie Smith, and she was on Goatee Records.
Right.
And she had just gotten signed, didn't have a band yet, and I met her through my roommate, and I was like, all right, I'm playing bass for you. And it was just kind of one of those things where she went, okay. And so that was kind of my first intro to it. And once I finally, you know, got on the road with her, you just start meeting people and just start snowballing. So I was able to kind of be in that Christian music world for, gosh, I don't know, 8-9 years. And yeah, I just kind of jumped from one artist to the next, and here we are years later still doing that.
That's awesome. Yeah. And it's actually kind of how I got to know you was through, that Stephanie Smith band, because my best friend growing up was playing drums for Stephanie, our close friend. We were both in his wedding, Stephen Kadar. And, and that's kind of how our paths crossed. But talk about like where you are now and what you're doing now through like
sure.
production, and then playing bass with Scotty.
Yeah. So for the last 6 years, I've been with Scotty McCreary, who's a country artist. And I've been playing bass with him, and that's kind of the longest I've ever been anywhere. Most time it was, you know, spend a year, year and a half somewhere, and then somebody else comes along and you jump to that gig. So it's been really nice to be with somebody for so long and grow that relationship. And, you know, there's still that weird line of employee-employer, but it's with Scotty, it's really nice of, you know, I can actually call him friend.
Right. You can blur the lines.
Yeah. Which is very rare. So it's been nice to, you know, when you're away from your family for, you know, most of the year when you're touring, it's nice to be a part of another family, you know, whether it's the musicians, crew, artist, you know, it's nice to be in that environment.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that. And on the side, I do some mixing and producing just, you know, as I'm really bad about talking about myself and getting work through that. So
yeah.
It's mainly just when somebody approaches me, I'm like, yeah, I'll do it.
Humility isn't the best thing all the time. Cause you're like,
yeah,
hey, do you want to do it? Yeah. But you know, there's probably somebody better, when you're actually really good at it, you know?
Yeah, it's a strange thing. You know, I've just was raised my whole life of don't be arrogant, you know, try to be a humble, good person. And there's that weird balance of, you know, talking yourself up to get work and prove that, you know, you're the guy for it. And then there's the other side of, yeah, you can just be an arrogant person.
Exactly.
So it's trying to find that line. And I just try to avoid the line.
That's so good. Well, I mean, over the past, I guess, month now, like I'm a big fan. Like me and my wife listen to the Bobby Bones Show, which is recorded out of Nashville. And the other day, Bobby had Scotty McCreery on, and they were talking through, and his song, Five More Minutes, hadn't gone number one yet, but Bobby was like, it's going to go number one. Like, I'm calling it. It's going to do it. So, like, as a band member, like, did you just, like, sit around and just, like, watch the charts and just say, yes, more work for a long time? Like what does that process look like for you?
Yeah, it definitely, you know, buys at least another year and a half of work whenever you have a successful song.
Right.
You know, and he had a couple of top 10 hits before us, but this is his first legit number one. So it's, you know, real exciting to be with somebody for so long and see the ups and downs and know how hard they've worked in their heart and finally see it pay off. You know, is good. And, you know, and there's the selfish side of, okay, there's more work. But just overall, I was just excited just to see it pay, you know, pay off for him.
That's awesome.
Definitely had the ups and downs. And so it's nice. And it's nice, too, that it's a good song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wasn't like this terrible, you know, bro pop country thing where it just talks about girls getting in your truck. You know, there's actually some substance there. There's real musicians playing on it. There's no, you know, like synthesizers and drum beats. And
right.
Not there's anything wrong with that, but it was nice to hear an organic song with a great message and a great story actually be successful.
Yeah, that's cool. Like one of my favorite movies growing up was a movie called That Thing You Do.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I just picture those guys on the bus and, like, Tom Hanks handing them the paper every day. And it's like, you're number nine now. And they all freak out.
And there was totally that feeling, especially once it kind of hit top 10 and it started moving really quick. You know, it was nice, too, because you get a little industry insider, too, instead of just looking at the charts. We're able to see, okay, real time is charting here, you know, even though the printed version says it's this, so you're kind of able to follow along, and it made it, you know, pretty exciting to follow that whole process.
That's cool. Well, I want to jump into a couple kind of quick fire questions for you, just so listeners can kind of get to know your personality a little bit. So if you had to pick your favorite movie of all time, what would it be?
My favorite movie, I'm a big fan of just strange, slow movies.
Okay.
So a lot of directors like P.T. Anderson or David Lynch, a lot of these guys that aren't necessarily mainstream. So movies like There'll Be Blood or Mulholland Drive are some of my favorites. But if it's just a pop culture movie, I would have to say Almost Famous.
Okay.
The Cameron Crowe film, you know, kind of about the 70s music industry. I just love that movie. I can watch it all the time.
Yeah, it is great. And actually, you're not the first interview that I've done that said one of their favorite movies is There Will Be Blood. And honestly, I still haven't seen it. So I guess I need to.
Oh, really?
And
yeah, it's a great film. I mean, you need to go ahead and be ready for a 3-hour long haul.
I got you.
Nice, slow moving, but it's a beautiful film.
So what you're saying is, it's not the Fast and the Furious. Is what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah. No, you will definitely leave watching the movie going, okay, I need a couple hours to, you know, get my spirits back up.
Oh, that's good. What about your favorite live show that you've ever been to?
Probably, I think it was 2002. It was the Prince Musicology Tour.
Oh, wow.
I was always a big Prince fan, and that album, Musicology, was, you know, kind of his little comeback, and it was kind of a throwback album to all the old funk classics, and, I mean, he played, gosh, 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And then there was a after party down the street at Rocket Town, a little club in Nashville.
Yeah.
And he played another 3 hours there.
Wow.
To like 400 people. So, I mean, it was a good 7 hours worth of Prince.
That's awesome. I've actually played at Rocket Town a couple of times. Back in the day. So, yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's a new Rocket Town now, but this was at the old one, which was, I mean, paint falling off the walls.
Oh, yeah.
It was rough.
It was awesome.
It has charm, though.
Okay, what about the worst band name in a band you ever played for?
My first band ever was called Loaf, L-O-A-P-H. And it stood for lashing out against people haters. So it's just absolutely terrible band name. But the formation of that band ended up going on to be a band called Cartel, which did pretty well in the like indie rock world.
Oh, yeah. So,
but our humble beginnings were Loaf.
That is amazing. Yeah, an acrostic that is very Baptist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were kind of the safe Baptist version of 311. It was terrible.
I gotcha. That's awesome. Well, I mean, you've been playing bass for a long time, and we do have bass players that listen to this podcast. And I know a lot of them would be wondering, kind of maybe like gear wise, what is your favorite type of bass to play and why?
Sure. I'm kind of a Fender P bass guy, precision bass.
Okay.
I have way too many basses. My wife gets very upset at me. I think I'm at 28 now, 28 different basses. But I always kind of keep coming back to a P bass. It always just feels right in my hands. It sits right in a mix. You know, there's just something about it. Kind of, you know, it was the original bass and it's not broken, so why should we fix it?
Exactly. Well, what about like when you are playing live in a live scenario? Like, what do you do as far as, I know it's hard to describe with words like tone and that kind of thing, but like, what do you try to do in a live context to kind of help the bass be thick yet not so low that you can't tell the notes and tone, tone wise?
Yeah. I play about three or four P basses live. They're all in different tunings. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of anti five string, but there are some songs that, you know, on the records go to a low D or C sharp. So I have basses that are tuned differently to get those notes.
Gotcha.
But most time it's just, you know, P bass with round wound strings. I roll the tone back just a little bit, take some of the bite off. But my pedal board, I actually send two signals to front of house. One is clean, which is just the bass straight up. It's running through a Noble DI, which is a tube DI. It's a great company. They're definitely not cheap, but it's one of the best investments I ever got, just to capture the actual sound of the instrument.
Right.
So I send that front of house, and then after that, it goes through all my pedals, and I send, quote-unquote, a dirty line, which, you know, if I'm using distortion or whatever, that's on that line. I tend to run that a little dirtier anyway,
yeah,
to kind of emulate an amp. So for years I used, you know, Sans amps, and then I got into the Aguilar Tone Hammer a bunch, but now it's just a concoction of pedals that I've kind of collected through the years,
right?
And that's always changing and evolving. But anyway, when it goes front of house, he has the dirty and the clean. So like on ballads, he'll boost the clean up a little bit more. And then on the more rock stuff or, you know, the upbeat stuff, he'll pull the clean back a little less and push that dirty line.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the distortion and everything kind of helps it cut through.
That's cool. Yeah.
I'm, you know, but it's a lot of trust with the front house guy. It's like, I trust that you're making it sound right.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But it sounds good in my ears.
That's always good. A good thing. Yeah. It's funny. I'm in a bunch of different like forums and stuff on the internet that talk about like worship music, worship gear, those kinds of things.
Sure.
And somebody had put a picture of Scotty up not too long ago on one of the forums that I'm in. And he had a capo on the first fret or something like that. And, and somebody in the group had said, man, I bet his band hates him. And I commented on there and I said, no, they're getting paid and they'll play in whatever key Scotty wants them to play.
Yep, absolutely.
They are very happy
the
with
great
him.
Thing, you know, the great thing about everybody in the band too is they're all great musicians. And so, I mean, if there's a night where it's like, hey, let's drop it down a half step or let's go up a, you know, a half step or whatever everybody does on the fly, you know, they don't need capos.
Right.
So it's kind of nice.
That is awesome.
But most of the time, to, you know, to Sky's defense, I think his acoustics a half step down, so that puts him in standard.
There you
so
go.
It makes our life a little easier.
That's smart. Well, of course, this podcast is kind of geared more towards the worship musician. But sure. I mean, you, like you said, your dad was a worship pastor and you grew up in the church. Mm-hmm. You've played worship music. And still, I think we all can learn from any type of genre of music. But for you, kind of in your opinion, what does the perfect bass player look like? Like, I know, like, you probably play a lot differently now than you did when you first started, but...
sure.
Like, when you, like, if you were to go, like, you're producing a record, and they said, hey, we need to find a bass player, and you're not playing on the record, what would you look for in the guy that you're bringing in?
Person by name or attributes?
Gotcha.
Which are you looking for?
Attribute.
Are you looking for attributes? I know when I started to play, or even up until just, I don't know, 10 years ago, I was just obsessed with the actual bass. And, you know, if I got a call for a session or an audition or something, my first thought was, I'm going to impress these people. You know, watch what I can do. Or did you hear what I just did? And through the years, that has evolved into the bass is, and I think all instruments, this isn't just a bass thing. There's a difference between players and musicians. There are a lot of players that can play anything and everything and impress you all day long, and then there's musicians who are actually going to listen to the song and figure out the correct part to play.
Right.
The vocal and the lyric is the most important thing in the song, so if I'm stepping on that, I'm not doing my job, you know. So I think as a bass player or as a musician, I want to do everything I can to help enhance that vocal and that lyric, whether that's staying out of the way or if that is supporting the lyric by, you know, maybe jumping on the melody with it for a second, you know, to really push that home. You know, I found that a lot of the times it's just staying out of the way and shutting up for a minute.
Right.
I used to always kind of have this problem with, especially in Christian music, it was like, gosh, everything is eighth notes and just on the root, or it's whole notes.
Right.
And it's so boring. But a lot of times, you know, the purpose of worship music is not for the band to be playing cool stuff. You know, the purpose is for the lyric and the melody and, you know, to glorify God through it and turn attention to there. So if I'm doing something that's distracting from that, I'm hindering people's worship and their experience, you know.
Exactly.
So a lot of times a whole note is the correct thing. You know, there's the flip side of that too, where as a musician, sometimes I long for more of, you know, I hear these recordings where it's just guitar players are doing playing diamonds with tons of delay on, bass players are just playing eighth notes, and it's boring me to tears.
Yeah.
When they could have done something to help that vocal and they didn't. So it's kind of a fine line of, you know. And from playing with, you know, artists like I played with Matt Maher for years, Audrey Assad, Britt Nicole, you know, a lot of these artists who would do worship sets, if not the whole concert was worship, you know, there was a fine line of playing the record or finding moments that I felt like could be enhanced some, you know. And that's, it's always, again, there's so many fine lines. I feel like I've said fine line a lot today, but there's that fine line of, you know, the, if you are to change parts, you are basically saying the producer and the person that played on this album and everybody involved was wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm right about this one thing. So it's kind of a gutsy call to change something. But so you definitely have to be confident in, I feel like this is really going to help at this moment. Now, Grant, you know, I'm normally not changing in the entire song in every single bass part, but there are times where I'm like, man, I can really help this vocal lift right here.
Yeah. And you want it to, and you want it to be you to some extent, like, cause you have your own style and flair of kind of how you play, and if someone hired you, they hired you because they like you. But to balancing that with the humility of, I can't play this better than the original guy. I just change it to fit me, you know?
Yeah. Well, and especially in a worship music environment too, it's, I mean, that's part of your worship is leading, you know, lending your talents that God's the ultimate artist and he made us in his image and he's given us this creativity and artistry. So why not use that to glorify him?
Oh, yeah, so sure.
You feel that moment of this is, you know, my talent, my art, and this is my offering of worship. Let it rip.
Yeah, and I've said this before, but like one of the things that I love to bring up about music is that it's totally, there's no right or wrong way to do anything. It's all opinion, you know?
Absolutely.
So I always hate it when I hear folks say, well, this version of this song isn't good, so I'm going to change it to make it better. Like, there is no better. It's your version of what was created. It's not you're not making it better. You're just making it different.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned, that's
why, I mean, some people love live records better than the actual records, you know, and it's because it's different interpretations and there's a different feeling and, you know, it's just all interpretation, I guess.
Like in production, say a group comes to you and they say, Nathan, hey, we want to put out a record, and we want you to be the producer on this record. Like, what are the first couple steps that you take in that process?
A lot of it is making sure that there's a connection there. You know, if it's just, if I feel, again, this, if my interpretation is that the music isn't good and I don't want my name on it, then I'm probably not going to do it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But if my interpretation of their art is that I really like it and I think I can enhance it and help it, then we're for sure going to work together and I'm going to find any way I can. Fortunately and unfortunately, budget is always an issue.
Oh, yeah.
Just from, if it's a band, I can always do it for cheaper because I don't have to hire session players.
Right.
You know, if it's a solo or something, then you're talking about players and, you know, it gets expensive pretty quick. But, you know, the good news is nowadays everybody's got little studios at their house that, you know, the gear's gotten so good that you don't have to have a professional studio with a console to get good quality, you know?
Right.
So a lot of times, you know, I'm able to cut budget of, okay, well, we'll get drums here. And then we'll do guitars and bass and keys and all that stuff at my place. And then we'll do vocals somewhere, you know. And so we're able to save a lot of money that way. So most time it's just budget. But then there's, you know, whole planning of choosing the songs. You know, I've done it some where it's a 6-song EP and all 6 songs are great. And then there's some where it's write 25 songs and we'll pick 3 of the good ones. And then we'll write another 10.
Wow.
To get the, you know, last 3.
Yeah.
But, you know, just at that point in my life now where I take, you know, when I was younger, I would take anything and everything and just do it, trying to build, you know, just build a catalog, a reputation, brand, whatever you want to call it. But now it's kind of like, you know, recorded music doesn't go away.
Right.
It lasts forever. So even when I'm long and gone, this is still going to remain. So I want to make sure that I'm proud with it and, you know, that it represents my name and brand well.
Yeah. Loaf is still around.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah, Loaf is not around anymore for that very reason. There is a CD, but you can't find it. I have the only copies. you know, so now it's just important if I want to put out good work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it is good.
That's cool. Well, a couple more questions. This is a question that I we've kind of already hit it a little bit, but if you could basically jump in a time machine and go back to that, you know, 18-year-old version of yourself and give yourself one piece of musical advice, what would it be?
I think it would just be to play simpler.
Yeah.
You know, I think when I was 18 and 19, I had, you know, an obsession with Victor Wooten and all these guys that are masters of the bass guitar.
Solo, soloist.
I think I would go back and look at myself and say, there's one Victor Wooten in the world. We don't need another.
Right.
You know, so quit wasting your time trying to learn all this fancy stuff that you're never going to use and spend some time listening to you know, some great artists and figure out what that, you know, what the heart and soul of those songs is, and, you know, figure that out and try to focus on that.
That's good. I mean, everybody, especially believers in Jesus, we kind of go through different seasons of life where God is kind of teaching us something new and fresh. And I always like to ask folks that I interview, like in the past 12 months or in the past year, what is something that, that God has kind of shown you, whether it's through your family or the Word or whatever, what's something that God's taught you lately?
I mean, he's constantly working on me, especially when it comes to family. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly having to reevaluate what it means to have patience, you know, what it means to show love and discipline, and, you know, what that looks like. So that's just kind of a ever-evolving thing, especially, you know, with traveling on the road, trying to juggle childcare, because my wife works as well. You know, so it's how am I present when I'm actually home?
Yeah.
How do I be present when I'm gone? You know, so there's just a lot of that going on.
That's cool. And constantly trying to improve and figure that out. Because, man.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Like, even myself, I work at a church. And a lot of times you can get so busy being like a good pastor that you totally neglect the first thing that God asked you to pour into, you know,
which yeah.
is your family.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure you could have stories and stuff like that too, just growing up in that context.
But oh yeah. I mean, I feel like for the first 10 years of my life, I know I saw my dad, and he's a great dad, and he was around a lot. But in my mind, it was like, oh, yeah, he was just always at church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the doors were open, we were there. Yeah. I remember walking from elementary school to the church, you know, and being there for a couple hours till my dad got off work, and then he'd take me home. And that was just how it was.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely a struggle. And, like, I'm in a small group at church, and a lot of the people that are in the small group are on staff there and work there, and I always struggle, and I know my wife does, because she doesn't, you know, she didn't grow up with a parent or something that was involved in a church like that. But a lot of it's, you know, okay, guys, can we quit talking about the church stuff, you know, and the
yeah.
politics or what's going on for 5 minutes, and let's talk about something else. Yeah, you know, kind of just getting that bubble and in that shell, and it's easy to fall into.
Right. And sometimes, like, church things are good things. But sometimes
oh, yeah. absolutely
good things get in the way of great things.
Yeah.
And just sometimes saying no to stuff is the best thing that you possibly can do.
Yep. But. Yeah. And I've kind of, another thing too, is I've just had this struggle with social media, you know, and, not that I'm on it too much, but I just observe and watch a lot of stuff that's happening, especially with this new, you know, progressive Christianity, new age Christianity. And just, like I even just put up a quote the other day that was, you know, biblically and structurally sound in theology. And I just got destroyed by people, you know, of like, how dare you say something like that? You know,
yeah, I think so I know what you're talking about. I remember going back and yeah. reading some of those thinking, come on.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of a new day where, you know, nobody really views the Bible as truth anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's gray and, well, there's parts that are true, but a lot of it, you know, is insensitive to people and where they are.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, so I've been just doing a lot of struggling with that of when do I say something, when do I not? Is it the best way to do it on social media, or should I call the person? Should we go have coffee? Is it even worth having a conversation?
Yeah.
You know, so there's been lots of prayer and thought and meditation on that of, you know, how do I love these people and help without being the, you know, Bible-thumping Christian that's hitting them over the head with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's an ever-evolving issue that everybody has to come to a point in their life and figure out
yeah.
what, you know, where does that land for me?
That's cool. That's good. Well, Nathan, dude, I appreciate you, man, taking time to chat with me a little bit on the Tip Jar podcast. Hey, if folks wanted to follow you on social media and kind of, you know, follow along with the journey that you're on, how would they do that?
Instagram is Nathan Thomas Music, and Twitter is Nathan T. Bass. Or some would say Nathan T. Bass, like Ernest T. Bass from Andy Griffith. Just kind of depending on how you want to do it. But those are both good places. If you want to get involved and watch all my Facebook fights, I'm Nathan Thomas on Facebook there. You can find that too.
And if you're listening from the Tennessee, Nashville area and you want an awesome producer on your record, y'all go look up Nathan. And if you're good, he'll produce your album. If not, he won't.
There you go. Yep. Yeah, if my interpretation of you is bad, we will not work together. I'm sorry. Oh, unless you have $1 million budget, then I'm all in.
Yeah, exactly. We can make it sound exactly however you need to.
Yeah.
Well, cool, dude. I'll let you go, and maybe in a year or two, we can get you back on after you've hit that number one spot, and a couple other times we'll bring you back.
Oh, I love it.
Perfect. All right, man. See you later, bro.
Great. Thanks, Cody. Talk to you soon.
Man, I always love talking to and learning from guys like Nathan who have just had a ton of experience in the music world. We can all learn from other people, and man, I just love soaking up knowledge from guys like Nathan. So thank you, Nathan. Thank you again for being on the podcast today. And until next time, stay humble, stay teachable, and continue to grow in the gifts that God has given you. We'll see you next time.